The door opened. In came Sheriff Peavy. He had a 2-foot ironwood head knocker in his right hand, the rawhide drop cord looped around his wrist. He was patting the business end gently against his left palm as he stepped through the door. His eyes found the white-faced lad in the cell and he smiled.
"Hey up, Billy, son of Bill," he said. "We're with ye and all's fine. Fear nothing."
Billy tried to smile, but looked like he feared much. Steg Luka came next, rocking from side to side on those tree-stump feet of his. After him came a man nearly as old, with a mangy white mustache, dirty gray hair falling to his shoulders, and a sinister, squinted look in his eyes. Or perhaps he was only nearsighted. The list named him as Bobby Frayne. "Come slow," I said, "and give this boy a good look at you." They came. As each one passed, Billy Streeter looked anxiously into his face.
"Good evening to you, boy," Luka said as he went by.
Bobby Frayne tipped an invisible cap. One of the younger ones, Jake Marsh, according to the list, stuck out a tongue yellow with bingo weed tobacco. The others just shuffled past. A couple kept their heads lowered until Wegg barked at them to raise up and look the kiddo in the eye. There was no dawning recognition on Bill Streeter's face, only a mixture of fright and perplexity. I kept my own face blank, but I was losing hope. Why, after all, would the skin man break? He had nothing to lose by playing out his string, and he must know it. Now there were only 4 left, then 2, then only the kid who in the busted luck had spoken of being afraid. I saw a change on Billy's face as that one went by, and for a moment I thought we had something, then realized it was nothing more than the recognition of one young person for another. Last came Wegg, who had put away his head knocker and donned brass knuckle dusters on each hand. He gave Billy Streeter a not very pleasant smile.
"Don't see no merchandise you want to buy, Yunker? Well, I'm sorry, but I can't say I'm surprised."
"Gunslinger," Billy said to me. "Side this chain." "Yes, Billy." I shouldered Wegg aside and stood in front of the cell. Billy touched his tongue to his upper lip. "Walk them by again, if it please you. Only this time, have them hold up their pants. I can't see the rings."
"Billy, the rings are all the same."
"No," he said, "they ain't." The wind was in a lull, and Sheriff Peavy heard him.
"Turn around, my cullies, and back you march. Only this time, hike up your trousers."
"Ain't enough enough,"
the man with the old wrist clock grumbled. The list called him Ollie Yang.
"We was promised shots, long ones." "What's it to you, honey?" Wegg asked. "Ain't you got to go back that way any row? Did your marmer drop you on your head?"
They grumbled about it, but started back down the corridor toward the office, this time from youngest to oldest, and holding up their pants. All the tattoos looked about the same to me. I at first thought they must to the boy as well. Then I saw his eyes widen, and he took another step away from the bars. Yet he said nothing. "Sheriff, hold them right there for a moment, if you will," I said. Peavy moved in front of the door to the office, and I stepped to the cell and spoke low. "Billy, see something?"
"The mark," he said. "I seen the mark. It's the man with the broken ring."
I didn't understand. Then I did. I thought of all the times Court had called me a Slowkins from the eyebrows up. He called the others those things and worse. Of course he did. It was his job. But standing in the corridor of that Debaria jail with the simoom blowing outside, I thought he had been right about me. I was a Slowkins. Only minutes ago, I'd thought that if there had been more than the memory of the tattoo, I'd have gotten it from Billy when he was hypnotized. Now I realized I had gotten it. "Is there anything else?" I'd asked him, already sure that there wasn't, only wanting to raise him from the trance that was so obviously upsetting him. And when he'd said, "The white mark," but dubiously, as if asking himself, foolish Roland had let it pass. The Salties were getting restless. Ollie Yang, the one with the rusty wrist clock, was saying they'd done as asked, and he wanted to go back to the busted to get his drink and his damn boots. "Which one?" I asked Billy. He leaned forward and whispered. I nodded, then turned to the knot of men at the end of the corridor. Jamie was watching them closely, hands resting on the butts of his revolvers. The men must have seen something in my face because they ceased their grumbling and just stared. The only sound was the wind and the constant gritty slosh of dust against the building. As to what happened next, I've thought it over many times since, and I don't think we could have prevented it. We didn't know how fast the change happened, you see. I don't think Vanney did either, or he would have warned us. Even my father said as much when I finished making my report and stood, with all those books frowning down upon me, waiting for him to pass judgment on my actions in Debaria, not as my father, but as my Din. For one thing, I was and am grateful. I almost told Peavy to bring forward the man Billy had named, but then I changed my mind. Not because Peavy had helped my father once upon a bye, but because little Debaria and the salt houses were not his fill. "Wegg," I said, "Ollie Ang to me, do it please ya."
"Which?"
"The one with the clock on his wrist."
"Here now,"
Ollie Ang squawked as Constable Wegg laid hold of him. He was slight for a minor, almost bookish, but his arms were slabbed with muscle, and I could see more muscle lifting the shoulders of his chambray work shirt.
"Here now, I ain't done nothing. It ain't fair to single me out just because this here kid wants to show off."
"Shut your hole," Wegg said, and pulled him through the little clod of miners. "Huck up your pants again," I told him.
"Fuck you, brat, and the horse you rode in on.
Huck up, or I'll do it for you." He raised his hands and balled them into fists.
"Try, just you t—"
Jamie strolled up behind him, drew one of his guns, tossed it lightly into the air, caught it by the barrel, and brought the butt down on Aang's head. A smartly calculated blow. It didn't knock the man out, but he dropped his fists, and Wegg caught him under the armpit when his knees loosened. I pulled up the right leg of his overalls, and there it was, a blue Billy Stockade tattoo that had been cut, broken, to use Billy Streeter's word, by a thick white scar that ran all the way to his knee. That's what I saw when I was a-layin' under that pile of tack.
"He's making it up," Aang said.
He looked dazed, and his words were muzzy. A thin rill of blood ran down the side of his face from where Jamie's blow had opened his scalp a little. I knew better. Billy had mentioned the white mark long before he'd set eyes on Ollie Aang in the jail. I opened my mouth, meaning to tell Wegg to throw him in a cell, but that was when the old man of the crew burst forward. In his eyes was a look of belated realization, nor was that all. He was furious. Before I or Jamie or Wegg could stop him, Steg Luka grabbed Aang by the shoulders and bore him back against the bars across the aisle from the drunken disorderly cell.
"I should have known," he shouted. "I should have known weeks ago, you great grouch, shifty asshole, you murdering trollic!"
He seized the arm bearing the old watch.
"Where'd you get this? If not in the crack, the green light comes from. Where else? Oh, you murdering, skin-changing bastard!"
Lucas spit into Aang's dazed face, then turned to Jamie and me, still holding up the miner's arm.
"Said he found it in a hole outside one of the old foothill plugs. Said it was probably leftover outlaw booty from the Crow Gang, and like fools, we believed him. Even went digging around for more on our days off, didn't we?"
He turned back to the dazed Ollie Aang. Dazed was how he looked to us, anyway. But who knows what was going on behind those eyes.
"And you laughing up your fucking sleeve at us while we did it, I've no doubt. You found it in a hole, all right, but it wasn't in one of the old plugs. You went into the crack, into the green light. It was you. It was you. It was—"
Aang twisted from the chin up. I don't mean he grimaced. His entire head twisted. It was like watching a cloth being wrung by invisible hands. His eyes rose up until one was above the other, and they turned from blue to jet black. His skin paled first to white, then to green. It rose as if pushed by fists from beneath and cracked into scales. His clothes dropped from his body because his body was no longer that of a man, nor was it a bear or a wolf or a lion. Those things we might have been prepared for. We might even have been prepared for an alligator, such as the thing that had assaulted the unfortunate Fortuna at Serenity. although it was closer to an alligator than anything else. In a space of 3 seconds, Ollie Yang turned into a man-high snake, a pooky. Luca, still holding onto an arm that was shrinking toward that fat green body, gave out a yell that was muffled when the snake, still with a flopping tonsure of human hair around its elongating head, jammed itself into the old man's mouth. There was a wet popping sound as Luca's lower jaw was torn from the joints and tendons, holding it to the upper. I saw his wattled neck swell and grow smooth as that thing, still changing, still standing on the dwindling remnants of human legs, bored into his throat like a drill. There were yells and screams of horror from the head of the aisle as the other salty stampeded. I paid them no notice. I saw Jamie wrap his arms around the snake's growing, swelling body in a fruitless attempt to pull it out of the dying Steg Luca's throat, and I saw the enormous reptilian head when it tore its way through the nape of Luca's neck, its red tongue flicking, its scaly head painted with beads of blood and bits of flesh. Wegg threw one of his brass-knuckle-decorated fists at it. The snake dodged easily, then struck forward, exposing enormous, still-growing fangs, two on top, two on bottom, all dripping with clear liquid. It battened on Wegg's arm, and he shrieked, "Burns! Dear gods, it burns!" Luca, impaled at the head, seemed to dance as the snake dug its fangs into the struggling constable. Blood and gobbets of flesh spattered everywhere. Jamie looked at me wildly. His guns were drawn, but where to shoot? The pookie was writhing between two dying men. Its lower body, now legless, flipped free of the heaped clothes, wound itself around Luca's waist in fat coils, drew tight. The part behind the head was slithering out through the widening hole at the nape of Luca's neck. I stepped forward, seized Wegg, and dragged him backward by the scruff of his vest. His bitten arm had already turned black and swelled to twice its normal size. His eyes were bulging from their sockets as he stared at me, and white foam began to drizzle from his lips. Somewhere, Billy Streeter was screaming. The fangs tore free. "Burns," Wegg said in a low voice, and then he could say no more. His throat swelled and his tongue shot out of his mouth. He collapsed, shuddering in his death throes. The snake stared at me, its forked tongue licking in and out. They were black snake eyes, but they were filled with human understanding. I lifted the revolver holding the special load. I had only one silver shell, and the head was weaving erratically from side to side, but I never doubted I could make the shot. It's what such as I was made for. It lunged, fangs flashing, and I pulled the trigger. The shot was true, and the silver bullet went right into that yawning mouth. The head blew away in a splatter of red that had begun to turn white even before it hit the bars and the floor of the corridor. I'd seen such mealy white flesh before. It was brains, human brains. Suddenly, it was Ollie Aang's ruined face peering at me from the ragged hole in the back of Luca's neck, peering from atop a snake's body. Shaggy black fur sprang from between the scales on its body as whatever force dying inside lost all control of the shapes it made. In the moment before it collapsed, the remaining blue eye turned yellow and became a wolf's eye. Then it went down, bearing the unfortunate Steg Luca with it. In the corridor, the dying body of the skin man shimmered and burned, wavered and changed. I heard the pop of muscles in the grind of shifting bones. A naked foot shot out, turned into a furry paw, then became a man's foot again. The remains of Ollie Aang shuddered all over, then grew still. The boy was still screaming. "Go to yon pallet and lie down," I said to him. My voice was not quite steady. "Close your eyes and tell yourself it's over, for now it is." "I want you," Billy sobbed as he went to the pallet. His cheeks were speckled with blood. I was drenched with it, but this he didn't see. His eyes were already closed. "I want you with me. Please, Sai, please." "I'll come to you as soon as I can," I said. And I did.